Recall mania in Wisconsin is over. But in just 5 months, there will be a total of 115 state legislative elections throughout Wisconsin, not to mention elections for U.S. Congress, U.S. Senate, and the biggest of them all, the U.S. presidential election. So enjoy your brief reprieve from the political attack ads on TV, because they'll be back in no time. But ads aside, this hour on the West Side, we're welcoming two local political experts to break down how our local counties and cities voted in the recall election. And we'll also take a look at some of the candidates that will face off in the November state and federal elections. I'm Rich Kramer. It's political analysis time right here on the West Side. And I'd like to welcome to the program now our two guests, starting with Emeritus Professor of Political Science at UW-Eau Claire, Mort Cypress. Mort, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Glad to be here.
And I'd also like to welcome Associate Professor of Social Science at UW-Stout, Alec Kirby. Alec, thanks for driving in.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
All right. And we're also really eager to get some of our perspectives from our listeners as well this evening. Were you surprised by the results from this week's recall election? Were you expecting something else? And are you even thinking about the fall elections? And if so, who are you polling for, whether it be local, state, or federal candidates? Give us a call at 800-228-5615. The number to call in to the West Side Political Analysis Discussion Hour is 800-228-5615. And you can also post a question or a comment on our West Side Facebook page. So first off, let's speak generally about the thing that has dominated the news for the last, the last year and a half, and the recalls. And first, I'll start with you, Mort. Speaking generally about the recall elections, before we get into the local results, were you surprised by the by the way, it turned out that Walker won so handily across the state?
Yes, I was. And that's in part has to do with turnout. Fewer than 60% voted in the state in the gubernatorial election. Now, that was 10 percentage points more than occurred in 2010. But for the Democrats to have succeeded, they needed a turnout that came closer to what they had in the presidential election in 2008. In that year, when Obama carried the state, there was a 69% turnout across the state. And if you're under 60, that's clearly going to be to the advantage of Republican candidates.
But that's common knowledge. Aren't the recall elections just a whole nother ball of wax, different dynamics entirely?
We still know, and I don't think that the recall changed that. We still know that the more likely non-voters are on the Democratic side than on the Republican side.
All right. And Ella Kirby, what about you? What were your takeaway? What was your takeaway from the election night?
Well, I like more, was surprised. I was particularly surprised by some of the data that came out from exit polling. Tom Barrett won just 62% of union households in the recall, and that's only 1% higher than 2010. So the sound and fury signifying nothing in the issue of public sector union rights. We didn't see a lot of movement in that among the electorate. The other significant factor is the tremendous amount of money that we saw in this election, particularly on the Republican side, as Governor Walker outspent his opponent by more than a 7-1 margin. We also, the nationalization of this state recall election was pronounced. 2/3 of Walker's $31 million came from out-of-state donors. So this was a local and state election with national reverberations that I think bear to taking a look at.
And I will add, of course, that on the Democratic side, there were plenty of union dollars coming from out-of-state and other than union dollars. But Mort Cypress, did the money win the election for Walker and for the Republicans?
It played a role. It wasn't the only thing. There were a number of people who just did not like the recall process. Mm-hmm. That cost Barrett some votes, I'm sure, and gave Walker some votes. But the money played a role. A lot of the money, both the super PACs coming into the state and the money, considerable money that Walker himself raised, were spent with attack ads. The attack ads against the Democrats began several months ago. Barrett didn't get into the picture really to an intensive purpose until the last few weeks of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
He first entered the race much earlier, and not much earlier, I'm sorry, fairly late. So he didn't get into a lot of advertising for quite a while. But the attack ads have the habit of reducing turnout. It reduces especially turnout among those who are fed up with it. There was a time where an attack ad would produce a counter vote, where people would simply look at the attack ad, say that can't be true, and vote for the other guy. But that's changed. It's changed nationally, and it's changed here in the state, where the attack ad generally turns people off. The one who has the largest number of attack ads, and that's fueled by money, has a significant advantage in the election.
Now, Alec Kirby, let me ask you, did this thing turned out or started, of course, because of the collective bargaining issue for public workers, but did it turn into, after all was said and done, did it turn into a referendum on the recall, the use of recalls itself?
Well, I think the as Mort alluded to a second ago, the issue of the appropriateness of recalls as a tool of governance was called very much into question by this election. Only a quarter of those who voted thought a recall was appropriate for any reason. 60% said a recall should be used only in cases of official misconduct. Mm. So many voters were not sympathetic with the idea of a recall in the first place, which put Tom Barrett and the Democrats at a disadvantage.
All right. Now, before we get into the local county by county, at least in our listening area, county by county breakdown, we'll go to the phones for our first call of the evening. And a reminder to all the other listeners that want to get in on the conversation, just let us know what you think about the recalls, what you think about the candidates in the fall, upcoming fall elections, and what do you think about the redistricting? Give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615, or you can check out the Westside Facebook page. Right now, we will go to rural Eau Claire, and we've got Larry on the line. Larry, thanks for calling in. What were your thoughts on the recall elections?
Well, I was disappointed. My question is for Mort, I guess, mainly. What about these electronic voting machines? It's my understanding there's no real recount on them. There's no accountability. And it seems to me it's kind of strange that since Mr. Diebold promised George W. Bush that he would guarantee him Ohio, and he did, that it seems like more and more of these Republicans keep winning. And we all know that in Las Vegas and all these gambling, they can set these things any way they want them.
Mort Cypress, any thoughts?
Well, in this age, in 2012, the electronic machines are supposed to include a paper record.
Mm-hmm.
And that would presumably, when you get to an official canvas, preclude a problem with people manipulating the electronic voting machines.
Now, are you talking about the actual paper ballot? Because there are touchscreens that don't have any paper ballot.
There's supposed to be a record built into those now.
Okay. Ella Kirby, will you have any thoughts on this?
Well, this is not Larry's point, but it's a point related to our caller, Larry. The Republican Party has raised the specter of voter fraud and therefore have called for greater voter identification. This seems to be a cause without a cause. Voter fraud is practically non-existent in Wisconsin. In 2008, for example, the state conducted an investigation into complaints of voter fraud. Just 20 people were charged out of almost 3 million votes cast in the election. There doesn't seem to be a voter fraud issue in the case, and yet efforts to combat voter fraud may have a depressing effect on voter turnout.
Sure, but I've heard the other argument saying that, well, just because you don't see it because there aren't arrests happening doesn't mean it doesn't happen. When people were totally they're always anonymous when voting, but when there was no signing of the ballot or the poll book or anything like that.
Can I ask one other question before you cut me off?
Go ahead, Larry.
Okay. I just wanted to ask Mort, do you know for sure there really is some paper thing in there that can be cut? But the real other question is, have you heard any rumors, as I have, that the Republicans, Scott Walker and the Republicans, will now just make efforts to just seize Wisconsin retirement, and is there any protections on that?
There is a possibility of that. Some of that came out during the campaign, but a study committee has been set up to look at alternative ways of funding the retirement system, and moving from a guaranteed benefit system to a more flexible system that could subject pensioners with significant reductions in their pensions.
Reductions.
Yes, if the pension system in Wisconsin is in part dependent on stock market performance, and in part dependent on things like investment in bonds, which are more stable. If the system ends up losing, and also I should add that if you've taken what's called the fixed income option in retirement, your retirement benefits can't go below what they were when you started in retirement. There's a floor below which your investment doesn't go. Some of the consideration would be to eliminate that kind of guarantee. So that if the market does poorly, it could produce a significant cut in your pension.
So that's in the work. Excuse me, in the works.
It's a possibility.
It's being studied.
It's being studied. We know that there is some effort, and there's even been some legislation introduced to change the system significantly in that regard. The most puzzling thing about it is that the Wisconsin pension system is one of the safest in the country.
Oh, it was.
Before these things happened. I mean, they're paid for. All the benefits are paid for with the funds that the system has now. And so I think we'll see a lot of question as to whether or not the state will really move forward with that kind of change.
Oh my.
All right, Larry, well, thanks for your questions and your concerns, and thanks for calling into the West Side. Take care. And also, to other listeners that want to jump into the conversation, we're talking about the recall race results here in western Wisconsin, county by county. We're going to dig into that right now, and also we're going to be talking about some of the races to look for in the state legislature coming up in the fall. Of course, we'll also talk about a little bit about U.S. Congressional races and the presidential. This is the West Side. You can call in at 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. So looking at the results from western Wisconsin, I just did a quick tally before the show. It looked like, if I averaged it out, it looked to be about nearly 60-40 in every county in our listening area. That's including Polk, Barron, Rusk, Taylor, St. Croix, Dunn, Chippewa, Clark, Pierce, Pepin, Buffalo, Trempealeau, and Jackson counties. Alec Kirby, is that a stark contrast to what we normally see in western Wisconsin as far as voting for Republicans or for Democrats?
Well, historically, I think there is a bit of a change, although it does look hauntingly familiar from 2010.
Mm-hmm.
This election seems to have shadowed 2010 to a quite large degree. And I'm not sure that we can draw any conclusions from this. The election was just so many voters were not sympathetic to the idea of a recall. The quirk in Wisconsin election law that allowed the incumbent governor to raise unlimited sums of money before the election date was set, causing a lopsided spending. I think we want to be cautious about drawing larger conclusions from an election result that closely mirrored 2010, but not further back in Wisconsin history.
And Mort Cypress, the starkest lead by Walker that I'm seeing here is Taylor County. They had 72% were in favor or voted for Walker, 27% for Barrett. Then you go down the line, and Chippewa County was about the closest in our area. It was almost 50-50. Any thoughts on the results county by county?
Well, the change is not quite as great as it may seem on the surface. The breakdown was 57-42, 57% for Walker, 42%
statewide
for Walker in the area.
Okay,
in the 12 county area. Walker in 2010 carried 10 of these 12 counties. This time he carried all of them.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest surprise was really Eau Claire County. Walker didn't carry Eau Claire by a large margin, but it was not expected that Walker would carry the county. He usually leans slightly Democratic.
And we're to carry the county. He carried it with 160-some votes, I believe. It was razor thin in Eau Claire County.
Yes. And that had to do especially with the city. The city voted much more heavily. I think it was all but five wards in the city voted for Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
I think it made a the city made a difference in making it so close.
And the city, well, it typically, isn't it just kind of common belief that the college towns or bigger metropolitan areas, I don't know how metropolitan Eau Claire is with 65,000, but they tend to lean to the left?
Well, some of them do, but the university in this area, none of the universities in this area were big factors in terms of a student vote. The students were largely gone from most of these areas and were not sending in absentee ballots, for example. So that the university factor was less so, and that might have made some of the difference. And that might have made some of the difference in who turned out to vote.
And Ella Kirby, do you think it would have changed? Do you think we would have saw more blue spots in the electoral map or the county map?
Well, I think it was one argument for not doing for the Democrats to not do the recall election is because the recall election would come when students were away from campus.
Mm-hmm.
The initial push to get signatures on the ballot had so many young people, so many college students energized, but we simply didn't see that bump from 18 to 30 year olds in mm-hmm. this election that we probably would have seen if this election had been held in, say, April.
Right, and I remember that leading up to before the committees that were looking to recall the governor, before they actually sent in their paperwork, there was a lot of discussion of when it should happen. I know there was like 100 different committees that formed to consider recalling the governor, and there was a lot of people that didn't want to go instantly right away when at the earliest they could, which was I believe was it November 15th that they could start collecting signature. November 15th, 2011. Anyway, let's go to the phones again. We've got Andy in Chippewa Falls, and Andy, you are on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Thanks a lot. I'm actually a newly graduated Stout student.
All right.
I was just wondering what kind of part, you kind of touched on it before, but in Obama's last campaign, there was quite a few new voters that were introduced into politics, and I was wondering what kind of effect college students had on the recall, and if you could kind of give an estimate about what the next presidential election is going to be like.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for that, Andy. And we'll start with Alec Kirby. We did just speak a little bit about the effect of students and or the lack of, since the students seem to have been out of the college towns.
Well, first of all, Andy, congratulations for graduating from UW-Stout. That's a fine achievement for you.
Mm-hmm.
The news for the Obama campaign is brighter than one would initially expect. Exit polling showed that even as people were voting for Governor Walker, they expressed a preference to exit poll takers for President Obama by a fairly significant margin. So at this stage of the game, the Republicans are celebrating a victory, but not necessarily looking at a harbinger of future events in 2012, in November of 2012. To directly address your point, as we said earlier, Andy, you're so right that in 2008, the Obama revolution was mobilized and organized by under 30 voters, by first-time voters. And again, we saw an amazing amount of adrenaline injected into the political system by young people in the drive to organize the recall effort. But during the dog days of the summer, it's very hard to mobilize college-age kids and college-age young people. And so I think the Democrats struggled a bit there. Again, if the election had been held in April, it might have been a different story. Young power is strong power, but it was dissipated by the summer months, I'm afraid.
And Mort Cyprys, about how does this Republican trouncing, for the most part, of course, the 21st, I believe it's the 21st state Senate district, is still kind of being decided. It looks like the Democrats took the Senate. But aside from that, a pretty strong showing from Republicans. Doesn't that cloud Obama's chances in November?
It raises flags. And the flag has to do with the ground effort, you might say. The Republicans actually did better at turning out their supporters than the Democrats did. And it's the ground game that's supposed to be the real strength of the Democratic campaigns in the state and especially of the president's campaigns, not only in Wisconsin but in many other states as well. And we know, despite people suggesting that the president stayed out of the recall election, his campaign was involved here in the state. They were providing the voter lists and the support lists that the Obama campaign had developed over the last 4 years to the Barrett campaign and to the Democratic Party generally in the state. And that didn't produce the kind of turnout that would have been needed to get a Democratic victory raises a flag. Is enthusiasm down? Will they have difficulty in November because of that? Now, on the other side of that, as Alec has pointed out, the students will be back in September, and that leaves plenty of time to mobilize them. Already efforts are being made to make sure students are not penalized by the voter ID law. And the ones who are going to be penalized for it are going to be other groups in the population. The elderly and minority groups can especially be disadvantaged by the voter ID law.
And, of course, that's in court. At least the ID part of the voter ID law is in court. And that is a story yet to unfold.
Yes. And let me give you an example of the problem the courts are going to end up having to deal with. If you were born, say, in the South, and you're African American, and you and your family have moved to Wisconsin, it may be impossible to get a birth certificate.
Why is that?
Because the records weren't kept in many localities in the South.
Okay.
And that will then almost, pretty much automatically prevent you from registering to vote. Hmm. That's going to be one type of example. You also have senior citizens who may not be able to travel within the hours available to a driver's license bureau and get an ID card.
Right.
The state has to give you the ID for free, but you have to be able to apply for that and show proof of your birth.
Sure. Right, and there's the example, I believe, there's a woman near Wausau that that didn't have a birth certificate, and she had voted, you know, she was in her 80s, late 80s, and et cetera, et cetera. But then on the other side, you know, how the argument is that you've got to have an ID for so many other things in life, they say it's a common sense rule.
But voting is the one thing that is supposed to be a guarantee. Mm. That is considered a fundamental right in our system, and that's the difference between voting and, say, having a driver's license.
And back to the phones we go now to Rice Lake, and we've got Peg on the line. Peg, thanks so much for calling in, and what's your question?
I have two comments, not questions.
All right, shoot.
On computer voting, one, everyone is so relieved about the paper ballots that the computer can spit out. That is no reassurance whatsoever, because any computer worth its salt can print one set of figures for the paper ballot and the other for the write-out. It proves nothing. All right, second point, this wouldn't prove anything, but it would be very interesting if they did a absentee ballot count statewide, routinely. And if there was a great difference in the tilt of those results, it would certainly raise questions. That's all.
All right, Peg, thanks so much for calling in. We really appreciate it. And again, if anyone else wants to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. And Ella Kirby, again, another question about the voting machines. And it almost seems like, you know, with all the turnout, there was higher than normal turnout. There was just so much support, it seemed like, on the Democratic side. Now, I've heard this not just from our callers tonight, but a lot of suspicion about the way that the ballots are tabulated in these machines. What can you say to Peg?
Well, it's voter confidence, and the confidence we can have in our elections is a two-legged stool. There's process and product. The process involves electronic voting machines, and can the results be verified independently? And the product is are the results realistic? Or do we see as the result of electronic voting machines results that we simply would not expect from polling data? As Morton noted, this issue is going to have to go to the courts, and the courts are going to have to decide. But what we do know, the fact of the matter is that Wisconsin has seen extremely little problem with the process of voting. We simply don't have a state history of voter fraud. The alternate side, the product, I'm not sure has been analyzed enough. We're going to have to keep a closer eye on this as we increasingly turn to electronic voting machines, which I presume we will.
And Mort Cypress?
Yeah, let me add to that. There's a type of machine which combines a paper ballot with the electronic processing.
I used one on Tuesday, I
That's
believe.
Right. And in Eau Claire County, you had the option of using a strict computer entry or use a paper ballot, which then is read by a machine.
Mm-hmm.
That type, the latter type, is very accurate, and it is not very subject to fraud. And there's a double check on what they produce when you have an official canvas being done.
Mm.
The straight electronic voting in most of the areas in western Wisconsin, is primarily to give handicapped people an opportunity to vote. They may not be able to handle the what's called the op-scan-type ballot, mm-hmm. Where they have to write in or draw a line between 2 points in casting their vote. And so that is a way of making sure a handicapped person has the right to vote. Most people, as I observed, use the paper ballot and then feed it into the machine.
Interesting aside to that, farther south in Greene County, it was another situation where, like Eau Claire County, the race was very, very close. But the clerk there told me that in his county, only one person used the or maybe it was a district, but I believe it was one person that only used the touch screen. And those votes are recorded in separately. Like, so technically, if it's one person using the touchscreen machine, people can know how they voted. Anyway, that is anecdotal. I haven't been able to follow up on that. We're breaking down the local recall election results and looking ahead to the fall general election with local political experts Alec Kirby and Mort Cypress. We'll have more when we return. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We are analyzing the local results from Tuesday's recall election and looking ahead to the fall and the spate of state, federal, and the presidential elections as well. We've got two political experts from Western Wisconsin in studio with me. I'm joined by Emeritus Professor of Political Science at UW-Eau Claire, Mort Cypress, and Associate Professor of Social Science at UW-Stout, Alec Kirby. And we'd like to get you, the listener, to chime in as well. Dial in and let us know what you thought of the recall and what you think about the races that are shaping up for the fall. Our number is 800-228-5615. That's 1-800-228-5615. And you can leave a question or a comment on our West Side Facebook page. I've got it up right now, but I haven't seen anything there as of yet. I'd like to talk about the local recall race that we had for state senate, the 23rd state senate district, and that was between Republican Terry Moulton and Kristen Dexter, who is a former state representative, Democrat, of course, and also a former member of the school board and heavily involved in the Democratic Party in Eau Claire County. And I'll go to you, Mort Cypress. People were saying that this was a matchup, a rematch, really, because these two candidates went head-to-head in 2008 for the 68th Assembly District, and the results there were a little different. Dexter ended up winning, but it was still a pretty close race then. But it wasn't so close this time. What's your analysis of what happened in the 23rd?
I think at least two or three things that happened. One, the district has probably become more Republican.
Hmm.
Moulton beat Dexter by a larger margin than he beat Pat Kreitlow 2 years ago. And that I think is an indicator of some change taking place in the district overall. Secondly, there is the nature of the advertising that was done. There were some attack ads thrown at Moulton during the campaign by mm-hmm. the Dexter campaign.
Well, and by third-party
third-party people.
Greater Wisconsin.
But there was so much more thrown against Dexter in terms of negative ads. I couldn't turn my television set on without seeing about three Moulton ads or anti-Dexter ads, I should say, compared to one anti-Moulton ad from Dexter's people.
And they all seem to clump together, don't they?
Yes. I'm not sure there was much room for other kinds of advertising with the political one. So I think that was a factor as well. One of the puzzling things is that there was a significant increase in turnout in this particular election. About 59,000 voted in the 23rd Senate District in 2010. About 67,000 voted in the same district in the recall election, and traditional thinking would say, well, that should give the Democrats an advantage. Obviously, that's not the case,
yeah,
and that's why I think there was an increase in Republicanism in that Senate district.
And Ella Kirby, I was at Moulton's headquarters on election night, or his party headquarters at Fannie Hill here in Eau Claire, and the people that I was speaking with, they were telling me that the big margins and the turnout, you know, they said that the Republican Party did one of the best jobs they've ever done of mobilizing the ground game, of getting their people to knocking on doors and getting the voters out. Any thoughts on that?
Well, usually the kind of assumption is it's easier to mobilize Republican voters than Democratic voters. Mm-hmm. Republican voters tend to be higher socioeconomic status, tend to belong to organizations. It's easier to reach out to those people than traditional Democratic voters. But still, I don't mean to discount the get out the vote efforts of Terry Moulton. Any way you look at it, the Republican Terry Moulton did beat the Democrat Kristen Dexter by roughly 9,000 votes. Mm-hmm. That indicates a very impressive ground game by the Republican Party. And looking ahead to November, that's the kind of thing that would cause me concern if I were a Democratic strategist.
Well, that and the Republican redistricting, which we'll talk about in just a bit. We'll get another caller in, though. And now we're going to, we got a call from the city of Eau Claire, and Chris is on the line. And Chris, thanks for calling in. What's your comment or question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I have 2 points, comments and observations that I'd like to point out. One is dealing with the college students not being here. And I honestly don't mean this sarcastically or whatnot, but if they're going to school, let's say, UW-Eau Claire, they would be allowed to vote, but if they're not here, where are they? Are they at their hometown in, let's say, Milwaukee?
Sure.
Why wouldn't they vote there?
Fair enough.
If they're not Wisconsin residents, if they're out-of-state students, why would they be allowed to vote anyway? That would be my question. And
okay.
And going to the student, looking at the recalls, I myself did not sign one of the petitions, but in looking at them online, it seems to me that, well, a student could sign their name and put their, wherever they're living while they're going to school, because I know a lot of my Democrat friends, you know, saying, well, how come we had all these recall signatures, yet, you know, more signatures as opposed to ballot votes? That's my first point and question. The second one is regarding voter ID. Now, I understand, you know, you mentioned the 80-year-old in, I believe it was Wausau. And if you're an elderly African-American, good luck trying to get a birth certificate if you're born in the South. But you can't do anything. And I have quite a few elderly friends, you know, that we're talking 80s and 90s year old,
mm-hmm.
That you can't open a bank account. You can't get pretty much anything without some sort of ID. And to bring up the point of, well, what if they can't get to the DMV during DMV hours? Well, if they can't get to the DMV, how are they going to get to the polls?
Gotcha. Hear you loud and clear there, Chris. You finished? Or you,
I'll listen to the responses offline. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate the perspective. First of all, with Alec Kirby, I'm pretty sure that a person did not need to be a registered voter in Wisconsin to sign the petition. They just needed a Wisconsin address. And what about that? These students, sure, there's some students that come from out of state, but many of them live within the state. And why would it make any difference if they are located in, say, UW or on campus in Eau Claire versus out in the countryside mm-hmm. of Wisconsin?
Mm. Wisconsin traditionally has always had a much higher voter turnout than the rest of the country because the principle guiding the organization of the election was to make it as easy as possible for voters to actually do their civic duty. And as long as Wisconsin remains steadfast to that principle, we were rewarded with presidential election turnouts in the 60 percentile range, significantly higher than the rest of the country, at least up until fairly recently. The point about students, students are like everybody else. They need to achieve an effective student voter turnout. We need to have them organized. It's hard to organize a group that's been dispersed off to their hometowns or across the state, as we've seen in political movements throughout United States history, and I'm thinking of the civil rights movement, for example, when the black church was able to organize church members into activists. We need social infrastructure to generate voter turnout or citizen activism in general, and that's that kind of critical mass simply didn't exist on student campuses, and it was much harder for young people to make their voices heard.
And Mort Cypress, I'll ask you, there's the argument about voter ID that you need it for everything. You need it to be able to you need an ID to drive, you need an ID to set up a bank account, as Chris explained. What's your response?
Driving is a privilege, not a right. And the state can have all kinds of rules, as long as it's not racially discriminatory rules, can have all kinds of rules to restrict your ability to get a driver's license, including passing a test. You can't have literacy tests anymore for voting, for example, because voting is a right. And there are two requirements that are central to voting. One is citizenship, and the other is residence. And up until this year in Wisconsin, you were a resident for purposes of voting if you lived at an address for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that was enough to qualify you for voting. The new law has changed that to 30 days. Well, if you were a student living, let's say, in Eau Claire or in Menominee, you were living there for 30 days, you could vote. In that community, you had a right to vote in that community. The census even counted you as a resident of the place where you're going to school if you're also living there. Mm. Then if you finished school up at the end of May and you went back to live with your parents for the summer, you will not have been in your home community for 30 days. The new law requires 30 days residence. In terms of voting in this recall election, but you could vote absentee in your location where you were going to school, as long as you lived at that address, which of course students will have. So you could vote absentee, but getting the students mobilized to do that would have been very, very difficult.
All right. Go ahead, Al Kirby.
Oh, well, I just, Chris, our caller pointed out that you need an ID to do just about everything. Well, in a democracy, our concern is getting people to vote who don't have anything, people who operate at the far margins of society. And many people are raising questions about how we can access voting for people who don't have driver's licenses, who don't have bank accounts.
All right. And with that, you're listening to Political Analysis of this week's recall results and the upcoming fall races, which we haven't talked about. And we're going to try to squeeze that all in about 10 minutes. So you're listening to The West Side. We'll be right back. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening, by the way. I'm joined by Associate Professor of Social Science at UW-Stout, Alec Kirby, and Emeritus Professor of Political Science at UW-Eau Claire, Mort Cypress. We're talking this hour about the local results from the recall election and the upcoming fall elections, which we're going to get into right now. Fall elections, of course, you've got state races, congressional races, and the race for the presidential election as well. If you've got any call or questions or comments about the recall or about the upcoming fall elections, give us a call, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. Now, I'd like to talk about the races that are coming up in the fall. We've got, in our listening area, we've got about nine races that we will be covering. We're going to have West Side candidate forums on all of those races, but there are others. There are two, for example, that are unopposed. That is the 91st and the 92nd state assembly races. Mort Cypress, let me ask you, what's the race to watch this fall as far as state legislature?
Well, I think the one that's especially questionable in terms of the results would be the 93rd assembly district.
And who's that?
Petrick is the incumbent, and Smith is going to run against him again. Smith had held the seat for a couple of terms prior to his defeat by Petrick. That is a district that has been made a little more Republican, but it's also a district where people are known to vote differently from their party. And so Smith feels and the Democrats feel they have a chance of regaining that seat despite the reapportionment. Mm. There are a couple of other districts in the state where there will probably not be a contest. In the 91st and 92nd districts, as you pointed out, there's only a Democratic candidate in each of those districts. There are no Republican candidates.
Right. And that leads us into the whole talk of, or discussion about redistricting. And Mort, you and I were talking about this before. I did a story for Wisconsin Public Radio about how there are 24, as you mentioned, 24 unopposed races in the state assembly where Democrats are not being opposed by Republicans. What's going on there? Is it because the recall or the redistricting maps are so powerful?
Mm-hmm. With the exception of the two in this area, the two races in this area, all of the others are from generally the Milwaukee area and the Madison area, and a couple of them from the Kenosha area, one from Racine, one from Appleton. They're from very heavy Democratic districts, and the Republicans basically decided they're not going to waste their resources in a district that they're going to lose in anyway. Mm. There are only three areas where the Republicans are running unopposed. The Democrats made a decision that they were going to contest as many seats as they could in order to force the Republicans to use their resources, even in areas where they're usually safe. Mm. And so you've got a competitive situation, at least on paper, in most of the Republican held seats.
All right, and Alec Kirby, every party does it when they have total control of the state legislature. They will write the maps to benefit their party, and this year is no different. How will the Republican redistricting affect the state races? Are we gonna flip the Senate back from what is now a tenuous grasp by the Democrats back to Republican control, do you think?
Potentially. It's called gerrymandering. It's drawing district lines for partisan advantage. And as it's always practiced by, in its most egregious form, when one political party has an absolute or near absolute power over the instruments of state government. Whoever draws the maps, be it the courts, be it the state legislature, has the power to affect outcomes. Our system of government in the United States, we elect our officials from single-member districts. This is as opposed to a system of proportional representation. In that kind of a system, if the Republicans got 40% of the vote, they would get 40% of the seats in the legislature. But in our system, if you're a Democrat and live in a heavily Republican district, it's very hard to find the motivation to actually show up and vote, since you know, because of the way your district is drawn, that your vote will not actually count.
And I was speaking with Brian Westreed. He's the chair of the Eau Claire Republican Party. And I asked him about the 91st and 92nd. Dana Wachs is running for the 91st, I believe. Dana Wachs is the 92nd? He is a city councilor from Eau Claire, and he's running unopposed. And I asked Brian why there isn't a Republican running, and he said that there were three considering it. Two were actually realized they were living outside of the district, and the third chose not to because of political attack ads from third parties. They didn't want to be slandered, I guess. So there is that. His argument was that these maps are legitimate, Mort Cyprus, and that they reflect the they make the voting areas more homogenous.
Well, yes, they make it more homogenous, so one party or the other.
Yes.
And what they do is reduce competition. And that's the goal of whoever has control of the reapportionment process. Their goal is to make it less produce less competition.
All right. In 30 seconds or less, I'm going to ask you both to answer. Presidential election, Obama-Romney, Wisconsin. We'll start with you, Alec Kirby.
Well, based on the exit polling from the recall election, I favor Obama in November.
All right. Mort Cyprus.
Well, given that there'll be approximately 500,000, maybe more, votes cast in the presidential election, that would give Obama an advantage.
All right. That's our time. I'd like to thank my guests for taking part in our discussion this evening, Emeritus Professor of Political Science at UW-Eau Claire, Mort Cyprus, and Associate Professor of Social Science at UW-Stout, Ella Kirby. Thank you both for being with us. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Jim Oliver for handling on-air production, Joey Dietrich for promotions, and Ellen Zemaripa and Dean Kallenbeck for keeping our feet on the ground. Tune in next week for a discussion about groundwater and the stresses placed on it by agriculture, frac sand mining, and population increases. Thanks for listening.